Yes, Dick Benchley and Jimmy Edwards will be on hand for the next 30 minutes with June Whitfield, Alma Cogan, Wallace Eaton and the keynotes, all inviting you to...
I tell you, Jimmy, this show needs some bright new ideas in it.
What?
No, there's... That's not just a personal opinion. It was said by the lady who sits next to me in the laundrette. Mr. Bentley, she said, I think that that stuff you put on is very old-fashioned.
My dear Bentley, she was talking about your long underwear.
She was not. Jimmy, you've got to pull your socks up.
Well, why me? Why don't you pull your socks up?
Because with long underwear, you don't have to. What we need is something where the audience can join in.
We give them all rocks.
No, they wouldn't do it. Now, look, now I got an idea. How about one of those things where members of the audience come up on the stage and do little pranks?
Oh, embarrassing.
You know, like pouring hot cocoa over each other or spraying each other with flamethrowers, that.
Yeah. Well, that fits in with the current trend in sophisticated entertainment. Mm. David, would you start it off for us?
Ladies and gentlemen, Tyfe presents its new novelty feature. People are awful.
In which, ladies and gentlemen, members of the studio audience take part in some simple games with grand prizes for their next of kin. And our first sporting competitor?
Mrs. Purvis of Coulston South.
Good evening, madam. Nervous?
No, Purvis.
Grand, grand. And what is your occupation?
I'm just a plain housewife.
You certainly are, dear. Now, here's what we want you to do. On this table, underneath this cloth, is a watermelon. We want you, within 30 seconds, to smash it to pieces with a cricket bat.
Certainly. I feel privileged.
Grand, grand. Now, if you'll just step off stage with me, madam, we'll pick out a suitable bat.
Yes.
This way, please.
There she goes. Yeah. Now, listen. While she's out of earshot, let me tell you the wonderfully witty twist to this jape. That's not a melon at all under the cloth. It's her husband. That is his head. She doesn't know. She's coming back. Have you got the bat, dear?
Yes, thank you.
Not you, the lady moron.
Yes, yes, I have the cricket bat.
Well, now, bash away, dear.
Like this.
That's it. A bit harder.
Come on, have a go.
Really
hard. Time's up. Now, Mrs. Purvis, well done. Here's the big surprise. That wasn't a melon. It was your husband's head.
Well, I never.
Mrs. Purvis, you've been a grand sport. And for entering so well into the spirit of fun, not only will People Are Awful pay all your husband's hospital expenses, we also present you with this lovely three-piece canteen of cutlery.
I don't want it.
You don't want it? For heaven's sake, what do you want?
Could I have another bash at him with that bat?
Thank you, Mrs. Purvis. And now for our second contestant, Mr. Umbridge of Tunbridge.
Before the program started, we sent Mr. Umbridge out of the studio with a live Mills bomb. We gave him instructions to knock at any house down the street, and when they... answered it, to pull the pin out and lob the bomb into the hall.
Mr. Umbridge is back now. So let's have him in to tell us just how well the joke worked, Mr. Umbridge.
Oh, thank you, yes. Well, as you said, I went down the street and I knocked at the door.
Oh, yes.
Unfortunately, there was nobody in. However, as the time was short, I shoved the bomb through the letterbox. Made a lovely explosion. When I left, the fourth fire engine was still trying to extinguish the blaze. Unsuccessfully, I'm happy to say.
Oh, I can just picture the owner's face when he gets back. What was the number of the house again?
23.
23? Oh, does anybody know who lives in number... 20 what?
So ends another People Are Awful. If you want to take part, please address your letters to me. Mr. Bentley no longer has an address.
Come. is taken. Oh, happy may he be.
Now let us hope our years may be as good as they have been. And trust we ne'er again may see the sorrows we have seen.
And let us wish that in and all our friends may far and near. May I enjoy in times they come.
Thank you, keynotes. And so to the Glums. Well, the Christmas festivities are over, and Eth has called round to see what sort of Christmas her fiancé enjoyed. So, over to the Glums.
How wrong! I've never seen a room in such a state. All the furniture overturned, smashed glass everywhere, someone's false teeth in the goldfish bowl. Oh, it couldn't look more of a shambles, could it?
Yes, Eth. You should have seen it before I tidied up.
Tidied up? But look at the place. Jelly all down the wall. Oh, and a leg right off the dining table. And a... Just what's been going on here?
The family came for Christmas dinner. It got a bit jolly. Didn't you see Uncle Stanley going home as you came here, Eth?
No, I didn't see anybody. Oh, Ron, that awful fat person being a nuisance to the people in the bus shelter. Oh, don't tell me that was your Uncle Stanley.
Oh, no, Eth, he's not like that at all.
Oh.
That was Auntie Florrie.
Oh, Ron, dearest, look. As your fiancée, I feel I'm entitled to say this. You know, I don't think I'll ever feel at ease with your family.
Oh.
Well, I mean, well, looking at the state of this room, well, you do see what I mean, beloved?
No, Eth.
Oh, dear, I wish I could talk with somebody about it. Perhaps your father, Ron.
Well, it's difficult at the moment, Eth. He's still lying down with the blinds drawn. But I'll call him. Dad! Could you nip in here a minute?
Come in.
Hello, hello, hello. Oh.
Ron, I begged you not to shout. The whole area behind my forehead is filled with red-hot wire wool. Have you seen your mother, Ron? She's disappeared.
Completely, Mr. Glum.
Oh, that's too much to hope for. I can't find her nowhere in the house. I can't look for her no more. My vision's not too good.
It must have been a very hectic party, Mr. Glum, judging by the room.
Yes, it does look a bit chaotic, doesn't it, hey? To be quite frank, Eth, I don't recall much about the party. Bits of it keep coming back, you know, but it's not clear. Ron, who was the bull who tried to ride my motorbike up the stairs?
You, Dad.
What happened to Cousin Frederick, Ron?
He spent the whole of yesterday in the corner, Dad, playing the piano.
But, Ron, you haven't got a piano.
That's what I kept telling him, Ed.
Oh, Mr. Glum, don't you agree that Ron's aunts and uncles are a bit, well, much?
Well, frankly, Ed, I do agree. Not one Christmas present did I get from the old load of them. Not a word of gratitude. And you can see what hospitality I provided here. Not a thing did they go without. Not even a thank you. You'd think that one of them... Hello. What's this card tucked to the mirror with a bit of blancmange?
Oh, it's addressed to you, Mr. Glum.
Show me then. Oh, yeah, let me get the start off me glasses. It's from all the family, it says here. Oh, listen to this, Ed. Tar for a real slap-up do. And we're sorry if we got a bit rorty. Well, isn't that nice, eh?
Yes, it is, Mr. Glum. Oh, perhaps I've misjudged them.
Yes, and it goes on here. Where's this behind the stain here? To show our gratitude, we have left something for you behind the sofa.
Oh,
wait. Quick, let me look behind the sofa and see what is they left.
Oh,
lummy.
Oh, well, what did they leave behind the sofa, Mr. Glum?
It's Mrs. Glum.
If you wonder why I love him so, he's different from the other guys I know. Some have ginger and some have snap, some have this and some of that, but my guy, all he's got is bang, jiggly jam. Some have kisses that taste so sweet, taste like taters or taste like meat, but my guy, all he's got is zoom, bang, jiggly dang. My Bonnie lies over the... My Bonnie lies over the... Bang, jiggly dang. There's nobody lies like my Bonnie. But even though my Bonnie lies to me, I forgive him because some are charming and some have looks. Some have money and some read books, but my my body lies over the... My body lies over the... There's nobody lies like my body. But even though my body lies to me, some are charming and some have looks.
Three more oobangs and a jiggly-jang, please. I say, Bentley, got to take me grandchildren out to a show, the Halls, you know.
Yes.
Thought of Peter Pan. Now, weren't you in that once, eh?
Only indirectly. I was connected with the Flying Ballet.
Connected with it?
Yes, I was a counterweight for Wendy.
Had to put lead in his boots, but you know, your Grace, why don't you take the kids to see something a bit more stirring? Oh. Something to stimulate their imagination. Something like Robin Hood.
Oh.
Now, there's a really full-blooded, rip-roaring yarn, if you like. Here, have a taste.
It is England in the 14th century. In Sherwood Forest, Robin Hood and his band of outlaws are crouched in ambush by the side of a rutted cart track. Not a sound breaks the silence of the tense little group. And then...
Quiet, little Jim.
Sorry, Robin.
Little Jim, will you stop this un-outlaw-like sniggering?
'Tis not my fault, Robin. The bloke crouching behind me's got an extra long feather in his hat.
Please, quiet thee now. If there's any more noise, I'll send you back to camp. I mean that. I do. Now, all eyes on the rutted cart track.
Robin?
Shh.
Robin!
Shh.
Robin, It's urgent.
What? What is it now, little Jim?
I've broke the string off me bow.
Oh, oh, little Jim, how could you do that?
Put me arrow in the wrong way round.
Oh, thou art half a trial to take on an ambush.
You are in a cross mood today, Robin.
Well,
seems to me you got out of your log the wrong side this morning.
Well, I'm sorry if I spoke harshly, little Jim, but a lot depends on this ambush. We're desperately short of money.
I know.
I've just been going through the books with the outlaw accountant. If we don't hold up more merchants per shift, we'll have to think seriously about going straight.
Well, I wouldn't mind. This outlaw life may be all right in the summer, but it's murder in the winter. Just one cold after another.
Yes, but we have our freedom. The long walks in the rain, the sleeping under the clear winter sky, the parties to go out burying.
That's what I mean. We buried four more yesterday.
Be of stout heart, little Jim.
You want to be stout?
Well, try. Force yourself. Any moment the merchant may come along the rutted cart track.
All right.
Now, I've put Will Scarlet in the hollow tree as a lookout. Let me call him.
Will Scarlet! Will Scarlet!
Yes, Robin?
Scarlet! Oops. Oh, why aren't you in the hollow tree?
Wasps.
Oh, I'm fed up with the lot of you. I've housed you, clothed you, fed you, and all you do is make trouble for me. You're more like in-laws than outlaws.
No. Just a minute, Robin. You're taking a very high-handed attitude, and I, for one, am not going to stand for it.
Well, men, remember the noble task we do here. You handful of freedom-loving yeomen, you are the last bastions of liberty.
That does it. That does it. I didn't join the outlaws. We spoke to you like that.
Ah.
All right, lads. Disband.
Wait. Listen.
What's up?
I hear horses' hooves.
Horses' hooves. Quick, little Jim. Thou hast sharp eyes. Who do they belong to?
A horse.
Oh, we know that. Whose horse?
I don't know.
Oh, mayhap 'tis the rich merchant. Quick, lads. Back into the undergrowth. Now, me brave yeoman, which of the band will jump forth and do battle with the merchant? Who's it to be?
You!
But it's always me. Oh, very well. Now, quiet now.
Halt and deliver in the name of freedom!
Oh, how enthralled we did watch Robin and his opponent grappling in desperate hand-to-hand combat. Across the rutted cart track they did struggle, and then into the undergrowth and out of sight. For a while we heard gasping and snapping of twigs, and then we heard nothing. After 20 minutes' silence, we did deem it safe to approach.
Robin, are you all right?
Yes, thanks.
What of thy opponent?
Oh, I'm fine. I'm just bandaging his head.
'Tis a wench, a female wench withal. Or if not withal, with most. Who art thou, wench?
Maid Marian, sire. I am niece to the Sheriff of Nottingham. Inform me, who is this I've been bashing about, this thin lad in the green comms?
The Sheriff knows me well. I am Robin Hood. I rob the poor and give it to the rich.
Wait a minute. Aren't you supposed to rob the rich and give it to the poor?
Cool, lummy. No wonder we haven't been making any money. There you are, Robin. You wouldn't be told, would you?
Well,
I told you, didn't
I? Yes, I know. You're all... I'm sorry. I'm sorry, little Jim. But I'll make amends. Look, lads, I'll tell you what I'll do with this girl.
Mm-hmm.
I'll hold her to ransom.
Held to ransom? Oh, merciful heavens. In 5 minutes, I will be the only girl in a camp full of violent and unscrupulous men.
5 minutes? It'll take us an hour to get back to camp.
Not if we jump on my horse. Come on.
It was a grave mistake kidnapping that girl. To start with, we had to post a sentry to protect her. Then we had to post another chap to protect her from the sentry. Then we had to post another chap to protect her from the chap who was protecting her from the sentry. Then we had to put another anyway, in the end, we had the complete band of outlaws walking around all night watching each other. Of course, Marion was happy enough.
Oh, Robin, this is the life for me. roaming the verdant wildwood all day, and at night laying my head down on sweet-smelling moss. I love it.
Yes, Moss quite likes it too. Oh, Marion, I wish you could stay here for always. I've never really been chums with a girl before. You know something, Marion?
What, Robin?
It's more fun than bows and arrows.
Well, can't I stay, Robin? Don't bother to send that silly old ransom note to my uncle.
Oh, I must, Marion. The outlaw band must have money. These suits of Lincoln Green, we haven't got enough to go round. I had to put a tuck in Little Jim's.
Well, that's not so bad.
This was Friar Tuck. I'm afraid the note must be sent.
We can start the note now.
All
right. The dads have finally agreed how many R's there are in Sheriff. One. Now, let's get down to it.
I would like to suggest that to make the note more sinister-like, we write it in blood.
In what?
Blood.
How could you be so horrible?
What's horrible?
It has ruined my fountain pen. Honest, Will, I don't know where you pick up these nasty ideas. It's so horrid it stopped that blinking bird singing. No, it doesn't. Now, Robin, come on, I got Dear Sheriff.
Yes.
Now, how do we go on?
Well, howdy, old-timer. We was moseying on down the trail.
He's not that sort of sheriff. Not one of the many evil kind. You've got to write him in Old English.
Old English?
Yes, you put F's instead of S's. Now, how does this sound, what I got here? Dear Fern, if you want to fee your neef again, fend up a pack of silver by 6 o'clock funding. Now, how's that?
I like it. I think it's very footable.
Don't think it sounds silly.
Oh, no, it's fooper.
All right. All we got to do now is attach the note to an arrow and shoot it through the window of the sheriff's castle.
Right. Now, all you lads with bows and arrows, assemble outside the castle wall this evening.
Aye, but what time?
Well, it's always 6:45 for the archers.
At 7 o'clock, we were outside the castle walls. The note that Little Jim had written out was attached to an arrow, and Will Scarlet aimed it carefully at the sheriff's window.
I miss.
I'll have to write out another note. Give me the pen. Here, have another shot.
Thank you.
Oh, yummy. Give me the pen again.
At 9 o'clock, Little Jim had written out 385 notes. And Will Scarlet had nipped back to camp for more arrows. And so, Robin himself decided to shoot.
Stand clear, please. This has gone on long enough. Let the master archer of Sherwood Forest take aim.
Oh, well. Dear Fern, if you want to fee your neef,
by 11:30, Little Jim was down with writer's cramp and Robin had bowman's elbow.
Mr. Ginn, look, Robin, we're only 8 feet away from the castle wall. It can't be all that difficult to hit a large window.
Hit the window? I haven't even hit the castle yet.
Well, let's strip round the old thing. You keep the girl. Marion, you can wed Robin and stay with the band.
Oh, Little Jim, do you mean Robin and I can be together forever under the greenwood tree?
Yes, my dear, and if you're lucky, you might even have a little fun.
A little fun?
Yes, you can call him Robin Hood the Ficken. So long, all.
The augmented BBC Review Orchestra bring our recorded show to a close. Those involved were Dick Bentley and Professor Jimmy Edwards, encouraged by June Whitfield, Alma Cogan, Wallace Eaton, and the keynotes. David Dunhill was the announcer, Frank Muir and Dennis Norden wrote the script, and the program was produced by Charles Maxwell. We all invite you to tune in again next week and
keep it.